I graduated law school in 1999, and I started working with corporate clients, and they really needed advice with respect to data privacy and data security issues, and it was the Wild West back then, and it still sort of is in some ways, and I just discovered this amazing field which has a confluence of computer science nuances and legal nuances and social implications that are mind-blowing, and I fell in love with the field, and that's how I got dragged into it, and I've been thinking about these issues and writing about them as an academic ever since.
What has changed most dramatically since you first got involved in this field to where we are now?
The profile of the field has changed dramatically. In 2003 and earlier, even explaining to people what the term information security meant was an uphill battle. It was a foreign term, and the field was relatively unknown outside of computer science circles. Today, we see headlines across mainstream press regularly with respect to data breaches and identity theft and, unfortunately, hacking coming from potentially other countries into our own. And so there's clearly a much higher level of awareness with respect to these issues, and I'm glad to see it. It's an important step forward toward developing a national cybersecurity strategy.
I'm going to throw out an observation I've made about cybersecurity in the maybe 3 or 4 years that I've been covering it seriously, and tell me if I'm on to something or if I'm totally off base. It seems to me that 5 years ago, there was a perception of this whole field as one field of cybersecurity. And in that time period, there have been like a million different branches that have come off it, and we now have people who are specialized in cyber intelligence and people who specialize in cyber forensics and cyber warfare and on there are a million different ones that you probably know a lot better than I do. Is that a fair perception on my part?
I think that is a fair perception. However, what it's important to remember is that all of these subfields are connected, and that's one of the changing dynamics that I worry sometimes that we lose track of, that security is only as good as the weakest link in the chain. And so you can't really divide, for example, the security of the public sector from the security of the private sector because of the back and forth of both information and humans between the two. And so although we have this blossoming in the field and these subspecialties developing, as you've very correctly pointed out, we can't lose sight of the big picture in security, which is this interconnectedness of all aspects of it, and that the vulnerability of information is from the weakest point in the end-to-end chain of its possession.
And now you're on to what my audience thinks about and cares about the most when it comes to cybersecurity, and that's that interaction between public sector and private sector. The administration's always very careful to point out whenever they talk about cybersecurity that they usually use the number 85% of the cyber infrastructure in this country is run by the private sector. And so it's just that 15% that they actually have autonomy over. And that makes the job of cybersecurity professionals in government more difficult, I think, because they don't really have control or policymaking autonomy to really tell the private sector what they can and can't do, right?
Yes, I can see where that would be of utmost concern to government professionals. And really, it's an area where the law has not stepped up in ways that I think many of us would like to see improve. Because of the way that the benefits of information security inside corporations are not necessarily evident in the bottom line finances quarter to quarter, there is sort of a culture war going on inside companies where the security champions are hitting up against a wall of resistance from people who don't quite understand the importance of information security inside commercial enterprises, or who are very worried about the dollars and cents quarter to quarter. And so there isn't necessarily the degree of investment or incident response or management of consumer information or proprietary information from other sources that ideally we'd like to see. And so the conversation that we've started to have in our society and that we need to keep having revolves around the consequences of one company with weak security practices imposing those costs that come from their data breaches onto other parties in that chain of information possession, whose fault it isn't that the information has become vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to think about, legally and otherwise, making sure that the costs of information loss are localized in the correct points with respect to who actually was it that didn't use best practices and didn't invest the time and effort to make sure that we were all protected in the possession of this information.
We came to know about you through your connection with DEF CON and the kind of the perception that the media is putting out about DEF CON. Tell me about your involvement there and why you think that's important.
Well, I'm strictly an attendee. So I was a speaker at Black Hat, which is an information security professional conference
mm-hmm.
that happens immediately prior. And I spoke in 2003, and I started attending DEF CON as well. And there's a significant overlap in the audience to a certain extent. But DEF CON is also composed of a motley assortment of enthusiasts with respect to breaking code, computer professionals, some criminals, some government agents. It's a very mixed bag. And, of course, random academics and lawyers like me. It's a mixed bag of people who are all interested in and concerned about information security questions. So the size of the conference appears to me to be doubling year to year. The venue has changed. We're at our third venue since I've been attending. And it's really vibrant scene of people who are deeply engaged in the substance of the conversations and who are also having a good time. And there's very much a tongue-in-cheek kind of vibe about the place.
Earlier this afternoon, we talked a little bit about the B-Sides convention there that's kind of an offshoot of it, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, B-Sides is the latest information security conference. It's more of an unconference, as they say, so it's a little less formal and it's smaller with limited attendance and going on at the same time. So you have overlap among the three conferences of Black Hat, B-Sides, and DEF CON. It's really a pretty small information security community, and if you hang around long enough, you start to at least recognize faces, if not names, pretty quickly.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing that the community is small right now?
So that's an interesting query. In some ways, it's a positive in that the professionals who work in this community, if they're deeply embedded in their work, have a sense of responsibility not only to their employers but to the community and to maintaining their reputation within the community. A high level of professionalism is definitely a good thing in this case. However, the downside of having a relatively small community is that there becomes a limited talent pool, and particularly when there's a cachet with respect to working at top-flight technology companies, sometimes that leads to a tougher recruiting effort to get people into either non-technology company settings to work in InfoSec, or sometimes government agencies have an uphill battle in luring away those top people from technology companies and potentially more lucrative salaries, but also this sort of status cachet of the Googles and the Microsofts and the Zingas of the world
mm-hmm.
Into the public sector, where obviously the importance of the mission of our agencies is paramount to the stability of our economy and the future of our infrastructure. But, you know, there's a status thing going on a little bit. And so part of the recruiting question that arises is talking people into understanding the importance of using their skills not only for commercial enterprise and for those kinds of ventures, but also for public service.
Is there kind of a sense of altruism in this community that that maybe doing whatever it is that I know how to do well, but doing it for money isn't necessarily the right motivation?
There definitely is a strand of that in the community. You'll find different people break and build code for different reasons. For some people, it's the sense, and I'm part psychologist, so I'll get a little psychobabble here. It's partially about building something greater than yourself. So the same way that an author might write a book, a coder might write a piece of code to create life in a way beyond him or herself. And with breaking code, it's kind of a conversation between the builder and the people who are breaking it. And so there's a demonstration of skill. There's some ego in it. There may be a sense of altruism. There may be a reputation-building component, or there may be a monetary incentive. Many companies have started offering bug bounties, for example. If you turn in information about a known vulnerability in code, you can get a payment in return. And some of the top flight companies are doing this. Google's doing this, and other companies as well. So there are many different motivations that are present, but altruism certainly may be one of those strands for a number of people.